all about. Dear Heavenly Father, praise be your name and glory to you, for you are the creator of the heavens and of us and of all things. And we bow to you in obedience to you and worship, for you are the only one who deserves it. We're grateful for the Sabbath, grateful for all you do for us and for your mercies, for Yahshua and his sacrifice and what he did for us to give us the chance for life eternal. We pray that this message will be a blessing to others and will be give glory to you. We ask this prayer in Yahshua's name. Hallelujah. You may be seated. Let's begin by reading Romans 12, verses 1 through 2. It says, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of Elohim, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto Elohim, which is your reasonable service. Be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is good and acceptable and perfect will of Elohim. Paul is urging us here to present our bodies as a living sacrifice unto him. We are to be holy and acceptable unto him. But he gives us also warning that we are not to be conformed to this world. This is something that is not acceptable unto Yahweh. Instead, he says that we are to renew ourselves and to be transformed into something else. To be transformed is to be changed into something new. It reminds me of a caterpillar that changes its form and turns into a butterfly. I'd say that we all would like to become better, to improve ourselves, but how can this be done? I believe Yahweh gave us a model for this transformation, and I believe that this model can be found in his feast days. When Yahweh does something, he doesn't do just one thing. When he does something, it affects all things, and sometimes we don't even realize it. The same thing is for the feast days. He set them down as special times of worship, as we know, and they also point to Yahshua's sacrifice representing the Passover sacrifice. They also represent the giving of the Holy Spirit at the Feast of Weeks. And then the Feast of Trumpets and Tabernacles also point to prophetic events of Yahshua's coming. If you'd like to learn more about these parallels, YRM has produced some excellent materials on the subject. The point is that, not to give a little bit of for their stuff too, the point is that when Yahweh does something, it affects all things. And while we're talking about the feast days, just to give you a little bit of correlation of Yahweh's feasts versus the worldly holidays, there is a big difference between the two. If you compare the two, the worldly holidays are based upon the renewal of the earth or nature. They are more based upon the worship of self rather than upon the worship of Yahweh. They are based more upon fear than worship of Yahweh, and they're more based upon the earthly cycles that keep on continuing over and over again. In Jeremiah 10, verse 2, it says, Thus saith Yahweh, Learn not the way of the heathen, be not dismayed at the signs of heaven, for the heathen are dismayed at them. For instance, Easter is based upon the worship of fertility. They worship, or they fear, that birth would not happen, so they worship the goddess of fertility to bless their wombs and their crops. Halloween is based upon the fear of the dead. To protect themselves against it, they would dress themselves up like them and take on their forms to protect themselves against the dead. Christmas is based upon fear that the sun was going to go away. Worship, too, was based upon this fear. They're all based upon fear, these pagan holidays. And all the festivals are times of self-aggrandizement and self-fulfillment. They're more of giving the desires to yourself at that time. They focus more upon their self rather upon the Creator, upon Yahweh. They are earthly, and they are not heavenly. Yahweh's feast days are based upon the worship of Him. They are not based upon fear, but faith in the One whom we worship. We come, and we worship Yahweh. Why? Because of the blessings that He has provided Him, provided us. They are to point upwards to Him and not to the earth. They are to recognize His greatness and His mercy towards us. Their base, as I always discuss, on becoming more righteous and becoming better people. We should be trying to become more righteous as years progress. That should be our goal, to become better and better people. Think of the feast days as us trying to reach a goal. We are on a journey to reach this highest pinnacle. This pinnacle in our religious lives, in our spiritual lives, is Yahshua. We are to constantly be reevaluating ourselves, so that we can reach that highest ideal. And this is very much different from the worldly holidays. Theirs is more cycles that continue over and over and over again. It reminds me of when in the book of Ecclesiastes 1, talks about the seasons that continually go over and over again. There's the seasons go by, but there's no change at all. I believe that the feasts are really a model for self-improvement, that they can be used to renew and transform our lives into something that is much better. When I discovered this principle in the feast days, I started to apply it in my own life, and it's clarified a lot of things for me. It showed me what I'm going through. Each part of my life, if there's a challenge, I know where I need to go. It's a method that I use now to help myself to improve and get better. And I hope that it will do the same thing for you and to help improve and better your life. So the process starts first with Passover, the first of Yahweh's feasts. Each of these feasts represents something different. Now, this is not a definitive list of what each of these represent. A whole sermon can be done on each of the symbolism of each feast. I'm going to talk about the focus of this topic in terms of improving ourselves. To understand what Passover represents, let's look at its history. In the book of Exodus, Yahweh sent plagues upon Egypt. This was punishment for Pharaoh for not letting Israel go. The 10th plague was the worst of them all. This was, as you know, the death of the firstborn. To save themselves from destruction, Israel was given a command by Yahweh. They were to kill a lamb on the 14th day of the first month, and that blood was to be sprinkled upon the doorpost and the lintel. And then when the death angel passed over them that night, those who had the blood on their doorpost would be passed over and would be saved. The second major instance of the Passover is in the New Testament. It is on the 14th day of the first month that Yahshua died for us. He gave himself for us, for our sins, to save us. He died a brutal death so that we may have life. So what do these two have in common? What they have in common is the idea of sacrifice. This is, in this instance, what the Passover represents. It is sacrifice of one thing for another. Now, to understand the sacrifice, this is not a sacrifice of self. This is not something that our sacrifice. This is something of something else. You know, when we think of sacrifice, we usually think of something that we're going to give up, something that we do. But that's not what this feast is. This feast is a sacrifice of something else for us. It is something external. You know, Israel could not save itself through its own strength. They could not will themselves out of the slavery and the problems that they were in. They had to use innocent blood. They had to use the blood of the lamb to save them. A lamb had to die to save them. The same is for Yahshua's sacrifice. We cannot save ourselves from our sinful condition. We need an external source to help us. We need Yahshua's blood and sacrifice to save us. Grace and mercy was shown to us because we could not save ourselves. In Ephesians 2, verses 1 through 8, it says, "And you hath he quickened, who were dead in trespass and sins, where in time past you walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now worketh in the children of disobedience, among whom also we had our conversation in times past, in the lusts of our flesh and the mind, and were by nature the children of wrath, even as others. But Yahweh, who is rich in mercy, for his great love wherewith he loved us, even when we were dead in sins, hath quickened us together with Messiah. By grace ye are saved, and hath raised us up together, and made us sit together in heavenly places in Messiah Yahshua, that in the ages to come he might show the exceeding riches of his grace in his kindness toward us through Messiah Yahshua. For by grace ye are saved through faith, and that not of yourselves. It is the gift of Yahweh." What is our reaction to this should be? Our reaction to this should be a humbling experience. We should see the sacrifice as it is. And what is it? It represents that we need help. We cannot do these things on our own. We are limited. We cannot save ourselves. When we accept the sacrifice, we understand its purpose. And what is that purpose? One purpose is to show us that we are mortal, that we are limited. The sacrifice should draw attention to our inadequacies. Most of the time, what do? We cover up our inadequacies. We try to hide our flaws. We don't want to face them, and we don't want others to see them. The sacrifice shows that we don't measure up, that we do need to have some growth, and that growth always starts with humility. This is the first step we take during Passover. Our first step is not to be the sacrifice, but it is to be humbled by that sacrifice. In Romans 12, verse 3, it says, "For I say, through the grace given unto me, to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly, according as Elohim hath dealt to every man the measure of faith." All change and transformation must first start with this humility. So we see a sacrifice done for us, and it inspires us to do something about our lives. We see what has been done for us, and we realize that we really need to do better. We don't measure up to that highest ideal, the ideal that has been sacrificed, the sacrifice that has given itself for us. So then we come to the second step, and the second of Yahweh's feasts, and that is the Feast of Unleavened Bread. In Exodus 12, verse 15, it says, 7 days shall ye eat unleavened bread. Even the first day ye shall put away leaven out of your houses. For whosoever eateth leavened bread from the first day unto the seventh day, that soul shall be cut off from Israel." So what does this feast represent? Well, it represents two things. One, it represents cleansing. In the command, we are to rid our homes of leaven. And this isn't just leaven of bread, like yeast and just bread. In 1 Corinthians 5, verses 6 through 8, Paul also equates this leaven as sin. So this is not just bread, but this is all sin and bad things that we're trying to get out of our lives. So we see the sacrifice and are humbled by it, and then we look at our own lives. We see them for what they are, and we become disgusted by them. We see those things that don't represent the sacrifice, and we want to eliminate those things that don't represent it. It reminds me of the other night, our garbage can was giving out some gross smell, and I realized that I had to take some action. Usually I take out the garbage in the morning because I don't like to have to walk down the road to take out the garbage, but I had to do something about it. It was pretty disgusting. So that's the same thing with our lives. You know, when we realize something is so pure and so wonderful, and then we see ourselves, we're like, wow, we need to do something about this. And thus we cleanse out our lives. We see the sacrifice and it inspires us to do something greater. We want to rid our lives of anything that doesn't represent the sacrifice. The feast also represents consuming. We are commanded to eat unleavened bread. You know the phrase, "You are what you eat." Well, it's the same thing with us. We are what we mentally eat, and those things make us who we are. We are what we watch on our phones and on television. We are what we read. We are who we hang around. Everything that comes into us affects us and changes us, because that which goes in is that which comes out. In Luke 6, verse 43 through 45, it says, For a good tree bringeth not forth corrupt fruit, neither doth a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. For every tree is known by his own fruit. For of thorns men do gather figs, nor of a bramble bush gather they grapes. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is good. And an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is evil. For of the abundance of the heart his mouth speaketh. If you want to have good results in your life, then you have to put in good things into your life. And this can apply to anything that you do in life. Let's say that you want to learn something new. You find someone who has achieved something great in that field. Those people that have achieved that have sacrificed thousands and thousands of hours to get to that point. You admire that person, and maybe you want to do the same thing. Well, their achievement was a price that each of them had paid. They cut out activities that got in their way of that goal. Let's say maybe a person wants to become a doctor. It takes years and years of study. We all have limited time. We can only do so much during the day. You know, maybe for this person who wants to become a doctor, they have to cut out certain hobbies. Maybe they don't hang out with their friends as much. Sometimes you have to give up some things. We can't do everything in life. Some things have to be cut, and life has to be prioritized according to that. It's the law of economy. When you do one thing, you give up everything else. You can't do everything. So you must decide what is best for each of us to do. A few months ago, I sold my violin, and I got tired. I know. It's all right. Well, I sold it because I was getting tired of myself as a musician. I was interested in all these instruments, and I was sort of good at all of them instead of being really good at one. And I got tired of where I was, so I decided to focus more on the guitar. And it was tough having to sell that violin because I spent a lot on it and I spent a lot of time with it. But I realized to become a good guitar player, I had to cut out some stuff. So when you give up one input, you take on something else. And this input is based upon the goals that we have in life. Our spiritual matters are things that are the things that we ingest. To become more spiritual, we need to ingest these things. Paul says in Philippians 4, verse 8, "Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are a good report, if there be any virtue and if there be any praise, think on these things." Remove the things that are holding you back spiritually. Things that are maybe holding you back, even your earthly goals and dreams. Really take on these goals. And this leads us to the next step in the next feast, which is the Feast of Weeks, or Pentecost. So what happened on this Feast of Weeks? So, you know, many believe that Israel was given the law in the book of Exodus on Mount Sinai during the Feast of Weeks. And the timing kind of works out as well, too. They were given the law during that time, and they agreed to do Yahweh's covenant. A covenant is just an agreement between two parties. It is stipulations that each agrees to. You know, this is just like a marriage. Each side agrees to promise certain things to do for the other. Israel agreed to obedience of Yahweh's laws. And Yahweh agreed to the blessings that would follow, or, of course, the curses that would follow if they disobeyed. The second major instance of the Feast of Weeks is in Acts 2. After Peter preached his message, many were baptized on that day. Baptism is also a commitment. It is a commitment that we make of ourselves in Yahweh, to Yahweh in Yahshua's name. So what does this feast represent? It represents commitment. A commitment to Yahweh's laws and command, and a commitment to Yahweh through Yahshua. In Acts 2, verses 37 to 38, it says, "Now when they heard this, they were pricked in their heart, and said unto Peter, to the rest of the apostles, Men and brethren, what shall we do? Then Peter said unto them, Repent, and be baptized." So the Feast of Unleavened Bread is the repentance, and the Feast of Weeks is the baptism. We are to be cleansed first, take on the good things, and then commit. Going back to the example of achieving things, anything you set yourself to do in life is going to take some level of commitment. And this is a very scary step, because we may fail. We may look foolish. We may not reach our goal. But if we do it half-heartedly, we will never reach that goal. Does anyone remember the Karate Kid movie? Anyone ever watched it? Great, it's a classic. Mr. Miyagi asks Daniel, and he's about to train for karate, and Daniel says, "I guess so." And Mr. Miyagi corrects him and says, "Walk on road, Walk on right side, safe. Walk on left side, safe. Walk middle, sooner or later, get this squish just like a grape. Here, karate, same thing. Either you do karate yes or karate do no. You karate do no, guess so. Makes just like grape." It's a step of no. You don't want to take the middle path. You want to take one or the other. You have to be committed to this very task. Your heart and soul has to be in it. You have to be willing to do whatever it takes to get it done. You know, Yahweh likes us to be committed. He doesn't like half-hearted people. In Revelation 3, verses 14 through 22, it says, Yahshua gives some very scathing, He says in 15 through 16, he says, "I know thy works, that thou neither cold nor hot. Thou wert cold or hot. So then because thou art lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I'll spew thee out of my mouth." So Yahweh is disgusted by Laodiceans because he saw them as a people who lack commitment. You can almost picture them standing one foot in the worldly ways of sin and one foot in the righteous path. Not able to decide the two, but just standing in the middle, not really able to decide. Deuteronomy 6, verses 4 through 5, it says, "Hear, O Israel, Yahweh Elohim is one, Yahweh, and thou shalt love Yahweh the Elohim with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy might." There is a single-mindedness of purpose to this. It is not a wavering spirit that Yahweh wants. He wants us to go all the way and do what it takes. Oops. You know, this is like the crossing of the Red Sea to the Israelites. There's no going back. You have to take that commitment in our faith and in all things that we do. And this leads us to the fourth step and to the fourth feast. The Feast of Trumpets. Numbers 10, verses 2 through 3 says, Make thou two trumpets of silver, of a whole piece shalt thou make them, that thou mayest use them for the calling of the assembly, and for the journeying of the camps. And when they shall blow with them, all the assembly shall assemble themselves to the door, to the at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. Trumpets were used as a call to action. They were used to rally the troops. They were used to coordinate the actions of Israel. So what does this feast represent? It represents a call to action. We have become humbled through the sacrifice. We have cleansed ourselves from the things that are holding us back. We have taken on the things that are moving, that we want to move us forward. We have now committed to that cause and to that goal. But now we have to act. Everything that we do takes work. No one gets high achievement or anything in life without some level of work. If you think you can, you're wrong. There is really no such thing as a free lunch. This is where the student that spends thousands of hours studying, this is where the worker that puts in time to hone his or her craft and to spend putting the time in to get that done. So what action should we take that we should do? If our goal is to be like Joshua, then we should act like he did and be like he did and do what he did. In 1 John 2, verses 3 to 6, it says, "Hereby we do know that we know him, if we keep his commandments, that he saith, I know him, and keepeth not his commandments, is a liar, and the truth is not in him. But whoso keepeth his word, to him verily is the love of Elohim perfected. Hereby know we that we are in him. He that saith he abideth in him ought himself also to walk, even as he walked." Jesus, I'm going to get some water, like my purple cup. This is the first place to start, to be obedient to Yahweh's commandments. But how do we apply these commandments? You know, we are commanded to love, but how do we show that love? This is a little bit more general advice than it is being more specific. Well, we are given some specific advice in Micah 6, verse 8. It says, "He hath showed thee, O man, what is good. And what doth Yahweh require of thee, but to do justly, and to love mercy, and to walk humbly with Elohim." James also adds this to say in James 1, verse 27, "Pure religion and undefiled before Elohim and the Father is this, to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction, and to keep himself unspotted from the world." I don't know what each specific person's task is or what work you have to do, but because each person is maybe different. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 12, verse 28, "And Elohim hath set in the assembly first apostles, secondarily prophets, third teachers, after that miracles, then gifts of healing, helps, governments, diversities of tongues." When we commit to Yahshua, he is going to have some work for us to do. Each person has gifts and talents. You know, in Matthew 19, Yahshua asked the rich man to sell all he had. But he also asked Paul to preach to the Gentiles. He's not going to ask of each person the same thing. He may ask of each person something different. Maybe your work is simply just to show mercy. Maybe it's just to help those that are in need. Maybe it's just to be a light to the dark world, darkness in this world. Whatever it is that you are to do, do it right and do it well. And we must keep working no matter what. And this leads us to the next step in feast, or rather fast, which is the Day of Atonement. In Leviticus 23, verse 27, we have the command, "Also on the 10th day of the 7th month, there shall be a Day of Atonement. It shall be a holy convocation unto you, and ye shall afflict your souls, and offer an offering made by fire unto Yahweh." This affliction is a complete fast. And this is shown by different psalms, like Psalms 35, verse 13, Psalms 69, verse 10, and Psalms 109, verse 24. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't really like atonement a whole lot, just confessions. I know that I feel closer to Yahweh on that day, and I know the spiritual benefit that I get from it. But it's uncomfortable. It's painful not to eat or drink for a whole day. You know, I want to, ever since I was a kid, and I've been keeping it, I've wanted to get to the Feast of Tabernacles. And I'm like, you know, I want to get there, but I got to get through atonement first. And, you know, I'll discuss the meaning of what Feast of Tabernacles means. But you have to go through atonement to get there. You got to go through that pain and suffering to get to that point. And I believe atonement for this purpose of this message symbolizes this. It represents enduring through the pain. It represents pushing past the pain. You know, we've been given hard work to do. Work sometimes is difficult. Sometimes it's not enjoyable to do. Sometimes you don't really feel like doing it. Sometimes you just have a bad day and don't feel like doing something nice. Sometimes life just seems too hard. You know, I use this desert scene in the picture here for a reason. Remember Israel, whenever they were in the wilderness, and whenever they were faced with hunger and thirst, what did they do? In Exodus 15, verse 24, they murmured for the lack of water. In Exodus 16, verse 3, it says, "And the children of Israel said unto them, Oh, that we had died by the hand of Yahweh in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots and when we did eat bread to the full. For ye have brought us forth into the wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." When confronted with enemies in the promised land, they said this in Numbers 14, verse 4. And they said one to another, "Let us make a captain and let us return to Egypt." This is sad. When Israel is faced with these great problems, hunger, thirst, armies, you know, these are real problems, and I may have reacted the same way. I don't want to be too judgmental upon them, but they were going the wrong way. They kept wanting to go back to Egypt. Egypt, what does Egypt represents? It represents sin, but it also represents the old way of life, how things were before they started this journey. They sought the, quote, comfort of things, but it really wasn't comfortable. It was just something they were used to. We, too, will be faced with challenges and pain. We will be asked whether we are willing to push through or will we give in. To go back is to deny the sacrifice that started this journey in the first place. Our spiritual journey, if we do this, if we deny this sacrifice that we are to do, we will deny Yahshua's sacrifice. We are asked very serious questions during this Day of Atonement. Atonement also represents fasting. As I had mentioned, what is this fasting? Well, we stop eating and drinking, as I mentioned, and it is symbolic of dying. You know, whenever you stop eating and drinking, you are not giving your body the things that it needs to keep on living. It is symbolic of dying. So I ask you this, are you willing to die for your goals? And it doesn't have to be actual death. Are you willing to sacrifice yourself for whatever you want to achieve, for this endeavor? For the instance of our spiritual lives, are we willing to give everything that it takes for our spiritual lives? You know, every hero that you look at, there's a reason why we are drawn to the hero character. And one thing in every heroic tale is a hero is asked this. They get to the end of their journey, and they're almost there, and they're faced with this problem of existence. They are asked, do I give myself for this cause, for this goal of good? Or do they go back to the old life, die as weak, and never go on and do what they were supposed to do? Yahshua himself was faced with this very same problem in the Garden of Gethsemane. He prayed, too, that that task of his sacrifice might be taken away. But he knew what he had to do, and he knew that that sacrifice was for the greater good. You know, work is hard. It is painful. You know, I remember when I was training for my third degree black belt test years ago, and I had broken my arm earlier in the year from blocking a kick. And I was also had a lot of hip pain, too, at the time, and because stretching hurt. I mean, Taekwondo is all about stretching and kicks, so I hurt myself too much. And every time I moved, it was a lot of stabbing pain in my hip. But I wanted to get that third degree black belt. So I went to classes, and I pushed through the pain, and I took Motrin, and then I took the test, and I passed. It hurt, but it was worth it. I wanted it. Unless you push yourself, you're not going to achieve the results that you want. And this leads us to the sixth step in the sixth feast, the Feast of Tabernacles. In Leviticus 23, verse 39 to 40, it says, we have this command. It says, in the 15th day of the seventh month, when ye have gathered in the fruit of the land, ye shall keep a feast unto Yahweh 7 days. On the first day shall be a Sabbath, and on the eighth day shall be a Sabbath. And ye shall take on you on the first day the boughs of goodly trees, branches of palm trees, and boughs of thick trees, and willows of the brook, and ye shall rejoice before Yahweh your Elohim 7 days. This word fruit here is defined in the Strong's as income, produce, Literally or figuratively, fruit, gain, increase. So what does this feast represent? It represents the blessings. It represents what we have reaped from our sowing. It is the result of the work that we have done. I believe it's also the only feast where it says, and we are commanded to rejoice. We are to rejoice in our labors. You know, at the end of creation, Yahweh was glad for it. He rejoiced each day of his work. In this journey, you have come a long way, and we are to rejoice and be glad in what we have done. You know, let's not forget about this part. It really is an important step. Yahweh gives blessings for us in keeping his commandments and his keeping his covenant and for staying true to him. And it's, you know, it's really hard to do anything unless you have, I guess you're going to get some results from those things and to be working for a reward. You know, would you go to your job if you didn't get paid? I know I wouldn't. Don't tell my boss. What if you just went, you worked 40 hours a week and he just gave you a pat on the back and said, good job. You know, you'd be like, well, you know, I got to pay my bills. You know, I got to provide. We want to see results for the work that we do. You know, Yahweh's blessings are for the life to come. But I believe that they can be for this life as well. This isn't prosperity doctrine. Blessings are more than just money, too. Maybe you're blessed with peace of mind. Maybe you have stronger family connections because of this. You know, the prosperity doctrine is really this. It's doing nothing and hoping for everything. This is hard work and sacrifice. Then rewards and results will come. Many in our age will look at many look at our wealthy today as maybe privileged. Maybe they have too much and they just need to give it away because they have too much and we don't have enough. That they're just, quote, lucky in life. I see the wealthy more as hard workers. I see that they have pushed through a lot of pain to get where they are. They worked hard. They've sacrificed for those things. There's really no such thing as something for nothing. If you believe that there is something for nothing, then you're being sold something, and it's not good. There are rewards for your labors. In Matthew 25, verses 14 through 30, it says, I think I have enough time to read that. Oops. It says, for the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country, who called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods. And unto one he gave 5 talents, and to another 2, and to another 1, and every man according to his several ability, and straightway took his journey. Then he that had received the 5 talents went and traded with the same, and made them other 5 talents. And likewise he that had received 2, he also gained other 2. But he that had received 1 went and digged in the earth, and hid his master's money. After a long time the master of those servants cometh, and reckoneth with them. And so he that had received 5 talents came and brought other 5 talents, saying, Master, thou deliverest unto me 5 talents. Behold, I have gained beside them 5 talents more. His master said unto him, Well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy master. He also that had received 2 talents came and said, Master, thou deliverest unto me 2 talents. Behold, I have gained 2 other talents beside them. His master said unto him, Well done, good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy master. When he which had received the 1 talent came and said, Master, I knew thee that thou art a hard man, reaping where thou hast not sown, and gathering where thou hast not strawed. And I was afraid, and went and hid thy talent in the earth. And lo, there thou hast in the is that is thine. His master answered and said to him, Thou wicked and slothful servant, thou knewest that I reaped where I sowed not, and gathered where I have not strawed. Thou oughtest therefore to have put my money to the exchangers, and then at my coming I should have received mine own with usury. Take therefore the talent from him, and give it unto him which hath 10 talents. For unto every one that hath shall be given, and he that have abundance, but from him that hath not shall be taken away, even that which he hath. We don't want to be like this one that hid the talent. We want to be more like the one that had the 2 or the 5. We want to get the blessings from our labors, and we are promised this. But we're not done yet. There's one more feast, and this is the 7th feast, the last great day. Sorry, pages sticking together. There really isn't a whole lot to talk about the last great day. There really isn't a whole lot in the Bible that talks about it. We know that it is the eighth day of the Feast of Tabernacles. We know that it is a high day Sabbath. And like I said, it's at the end of the Feast of Tabernacles. But numbers in the Bible mean things. I'm not sure if you knew this. The number one represents unity. The number seven represents spiritual perfection. And the last great day is the eighth day of the Feast of Tabernacles. Now, what does number eight represent? It represents a new beginning, a new order or creation. And this is exactly what we wanted to do in the first place. We wanted to become like the sacrifice. We wanted to become a new person, to change, and to become be transformed into something else. In 2 Corinthians 5, verse 17, it says, Paul says here, "Therefore, if any man be a Messiah, he is a new creature. Old things are passed away. Behold, all things are become new." We have become what we have worked for, the thing we have strove for. The old self is gone, and the new self is here. We have taken our journey and accomplished what we've wanted. We have seen the sacrifices made for us, and we have become humbled by it. We have cleansed ourselves from things that are holding us back, and we have become cleansed. We have committed ourselves to becoming better. We've gone through this action. We've pushed through the pain and have endured. We have received the blessings and the results from our work. And now we have renewed and become a transformed self. Now, there is a kink in this whole cycle. It's not perfect. We live in a sinful world, and we are not perfect. We still are going to make mistakes. And we're still going to need growth all the time. This isn't something that just happens and then we're automatically good. This formula isn't once and done. It's a continual process. You know, the feast days happen on a cycle that happen year after year after year. Well, this cycle doesn't have to happen just on a yearly basis. This could be something that you do every day, reevaluating your life. It can be constantly applied. And the first step to all this is, of course, humility. We have to start with that humility. Anytime we feel like we need to grow somewhere, anytime we feel like we have a problem in our life, it should always start with this humility. Now, the only caveat to this is that it has to go in order. The feast days have a specific order. They go from, you know, Passover and then Feast of Unleavened Bread and then Feast of Weeks. They're in a very specific order for a reason. So it is a cycle. You know, if you start with the commitment aspect of it, but if you aren't humble, then you can be committed to do wrong things. Let's say you start with the call to action, but you aren't committed. Well, then it's not going to last very long, and you're just going to stop. There is a specific order to these feasts and to this cycle. In whatever we do, we are on this cycle, whether we realize it or not, in our spiritual journey and also in the goals in our life. I urge you to use this cycle of transformation, that you can use it to help make your life better. You know, we don't have to feel stuck in a cycle of despair. We don't have to feel like there's nowhere to go. But we can use this cycle to improve and transform our lives. You know, I believe that Yahweh has given us a blueprint for success, and I believe His feast days are a great way to achieve this. Yeah, I know, and I believe that Yahweh wants us to be blessed, that He wants us to succeed as people, to be successful and to become better people, to become more like His son Yahshua, and to grow as individuals. So let's use this cycle of transformation to achieve this and to do this, to transform our lives and to help make a better life for ourselves and others. May Yahweh bless.